It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We explore how school districts navigate gender identity. A group of Eau Claire parents is suing the school district for its guidelines on supporting transgender and gender nonconforming students. The parents say in a complaint filed in federal court last week that school policies violate constitutional protections for parental rights and religious freedom. Join in 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Madeline Furstenberg is education reporter for the Eau Claire Leader Telegram. Madeline, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you for having me.
Well, explain what the parent group is seeking in this lawsuit.
Sure. So the lawsuit is alleging that the school district is, quote, renaming their children and giving them new gender identities, and then proceeding to hide that information from them. So their goal is to stop that from happening and to prohibit them from making any decisions that they deem should be theirs alone.
Can you give us some background on how the group formed? They call themselves Parents Protecting Our Children.
Yeah, so a document was released in the spring that indicated that it was a safe space training guide. And it said that parents did not have the inherent right to know about their child's identity. It said they had to earn that right. And area parents were understandably upset about the phrasing of that. And it led to some backlash at school board meetings. And as a result, this group formed to try and stop that line of thinking.
Outside of the lawsuit, what other meetings or conversations, town halls have been going on to try to flesh out, something outside of litigation? Are they talking in the district about this?
In the district, since then, there hasn't been talk that I'm aware of. I know that the district is standing by the policies that they've set from what I've been told. But beyond that, in terms of the litigation, they're still looking for how they're going to respond and how they're going to approach the situation.
How does this safe space training guide, this plan to support students, requesting recognition of a different gender identity, how does it work with the involvement of their parents? Can you kind of break it down for us?
Yes. So the district has something called a gender support plan, where transgender and non-binary students are able to identify their preferred pronouns in their name, and they're able to list the people who are aware of their status. And this document is created with the intention of having parents involved in the process. However, if a student indicates that their parent isn't aware and they don't want their parents to be aware, then the school district has a policy of not outing that student. However, it also says at the top of this document that if the student doesn't want their parents to be aware, but the parents ask to see the document, the school district has to give it to them because it's not a privileged document between the student and the district. Sorry, I lost my
train. Okay, that's okay. I'm going to just pause right there and reintroduce you as you talk about the Eau Claire School District's policy toward transgender and gender nonconforming students. Madeline Furstenberg is here, reporter for the Eau Claire Leader Telegram. You can join in on this suit, what you see in your district, at 800-642-1234. So how much influence, or how do outside groups affect what is going on in the Eau Claire district, specifically the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty?
Well, the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty tends to take on fairly conservative issues, whereas the district itself tends to be at odds with a lot of those issues. So I think that the school district tries to take into consideration different points of view. But like I said, this is an issue that I was told they're remaining firm on. So that's yet to be seen. Of course, I can't speak on behalf of the district.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But yeah, we're still waiting on a response.
Where is DPI in this? Well, you know, the Department of Public Instruction on this issue. What is its guidance to districts in this area?
I think it's just a complicated issue right now, and it's hard to say for certain. I think generally the goal is to make students feel affirmed and accepted. But there is also this crosshairs of, you know, at what point do we prioritize respecting and or protecting students over respecting the parents? And that's kind of the issue that's really the underlying focus right now.
How aware are parents of the gender support plans, and are they available to them if they request copies?
They are available. I don't know how aware parents are. That might be the issue.
You know, Will, the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty filed a similar suit in 2020 on behalf of a group of parents against the Madison Metropolitan School District. And I'm wondering, do you see crossover there with what is unfolding in Eau Claire, you know, with what happened in Madison?
Well, I'm not too familiar with what happened in Madison, so I can't speak to that. But I'm sure this is an issue that will continue to pop up as districts grapple more and more with the issue of protecting transgender students.
Have you talked with students about this and what is unfolding?
I haven't been able to because it's difficult to identify students who want to be public about their situation.
What are you watching for next as this federal suit works through the court process?
Next, I'm just waiting to see how the district is going to respond. They can file a counterclaim, or, you know, this will just go through the courts and we'll see if the lawsuit's arguments hold up.
How costly is this? I mean, is there money at stake here in the district?
There can be. What the lawsuit is primarily asking for is that the district just respect their First and 14th Amendment rights. However, they are also asking for compensation for legal costs. So there is that on the table as well, but they aren't asking for a specific amount.
Madeline, thank you for joining us.
Yeah, thank you again for having me.
Madeline Furstenberg is education reporter for the Eau Claire Leader Telegram. Stay with us as we expand on how teachers navigate topics of gender identity and the research in this area with UW Eau Claire faculty member with us, education faculty member. Join in 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Education Week is tracking policies that affect how teachers approach gender identity topics. Since early last year, it found the push to restrict classroom lessons on topics about gender identity has vastly expanded. The free expression nonprofit PEN America is on this too. It found state legislative efforts to restrict teaching about topics like gender, race, and LGBTQ+ identities in K-12 and higher ed, that has increased 250% this year compared to last. Join in 800-642-1234. Carly Grice is here, assistant professor of English education at UW Eau Claire, specializing in secondary English language arts teaching and children's and adolescent literature. Carly, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Hi, so as you watch the litigation unfold, what are some initial thoughts on school district policies around gender support plans and issues of gender identity and pronouns? What's on your mind?
Honestly, the thing that is foremost in my mind are the youths, the children and adolescents who are transgender and non-binary, both here in Eau Claire, in Wisconsin writ large, and our country as a whole. who are hearing this and seeing that they don't belong according to this lawsuit, or even at the most basic, that their fundamental identities are contentious. So I'm really worried about the kids more than anything.
LGBTQ children and youth, they face risk of abuse, a risk of neglect when their sexual orientation or their gender identity are disclosed to a caregiver, a parent. How do you see the role of the schools, and how do you see the role of confidentiality in this issue?
Schools, first and foremost, serve the young people that are in our buildings. No kid can come to school and learn if they don't feel safe in the school. And we can ask any social worker and know that not every kid feels safe at home. In fact, statistics that GLSEN has gathered show that 2/3 of transgender and non-binary students do not feel safe being themselves and with their parents knowing that they are transgender or non-binary at home. So having a classroom is important, or having a classroom space that is safe for them to be themselves and that doesn't basically out them to a parental or home life that is not safe, is very important for their mental health, including what we know about the fact that having at least one adult in a child's life that they feel safe and can confide in can statistically decrease the likelihood of suicide.
As you supervise your college students who will one day be the leaders in these classrooms, how have they been affected in their student teaching by parents objecting to the school district's policies or what they've seen in the classroom?
Yeah, well, honestly, my student teachers are afraid. Our numbers are going down of who even wants to be a teacher, given the broader political climate right now. I teach introduction to methods ELA courses, so the very beginning of their career, and they're already terrified asking me, you know, what if I get sued for just calling a kid by the name that they have asked to be called by? Am I allowed to mention that I am transgender or non-binary? So our student teachers and future teachers they're scared. And at the same time, they want to do what's right. So right now they're overwhelmed. And I will say that every semester that I've taught since I've been here in Wisconsin, I've had at least one student teacher with a transgender or non-binary student in their classroom and who has come to me with concerns of that student that parents or other teachers are actively not respecting their pronouns or are making them feel unsafe and unwelcome.
What advice do you give in those situations?
It's really difficult to give advice to a student teacher. They are not actually employed by the school. They are not protected by school districts or teachers' unions yet. Oftentimes, I tell my students that it is important for them to help that child be seen, supported, safe, for them to come to me with concerns, go to their cooperating teacher with concerns, speak to their administrator with concerns, but their hands are relatively tied about what they can and can't do because of the kind of liminal space that student teachers live in.
We're talking about gender identity in K-12 schools with Carly Grice, an assistant professor of English education at UW-Eau Claire. You can join in with your perspective, 800-642-1234. Mealy is here from Appleton. Mealy, hi, go ahead.
Hi, I just wanted to thank you, Carly, for bringing up the mental health impacts. I am a mental health counselor, and I have the pleasure of working with the LGBTQIA+ population. And we know how important it is to even have one supportive adult in a transgender youth's life, and how important it is as suicide prevention to have their name and pronouns recognized. And I'm not sure that parents who are against recognizing those gender pronouns and names understand the negative impact that they're having. Because I believe that if they knew that, and they knew that a child...
Oh, Mealy, you're breaking up, but I think we can get the understand where you're headed there. And I do want to pause and say the National Suicide and Crisis Lifeline is at 988. That's the new shorter phone number, making it easier to access mental health crisis services nationwide. 988. Carly, I want to turn to you. And as Mealy was saying, there are negative consequences when, you don't call a person by the correct pronoun. Go ahead.
Yeah. When we think about any place or space that feels welcoming, I mean, calling somebody actively by the wrong name, it's a basic statement that I don't see you, I don't recognize you, and I don't have to respect you as a human and an individual. When we refuse to call somebody by their name, by their pronouns, we are in effect dehumanizing them and removing their agency to their own lives. I know that we often struggle in this country to think about the agency and the right to life that a child has over their own life. But they're human children. They're humans. They are important. And something that stands out to me, particularly as Mealy, the individual who called in, and thank you for the work you do, Mealy, we in this country have an adolescent mental health crisis on our hands. The New York Times has been publishing consistently articles about what do we do with the suicide crisis? How do we help the adolescents? And if the most basic thing we could do is call an individual by the name they've asked to be called by and pronouns, and that will stop suicide, make them feel seen, welcome, that we want them here, I don't really see why that is a problem.
You are a former middle school and high school English teacher. Is students asking teachers for support about gender and sexual identities, is that a new behavior in schools, or has it been there all along?
It's absolutely not new. Like most transgender and LGBTQIA plus individuals have been saying for a long time, they've been here for thousands of years. And I myself am not relatively old. Or at least I like to think I'm not. And I taught high school English in South Carolina in the upstate. I also attended Clemson University between 2003 and 2007. And when I was an undergraduate secondary education in English major at Clemson University, we were all required to spend time mentoring and teaching in local middle and high schools. And back in, I think it was 2005, 2006, I was working at an after-school program with one of our local middle schools, and we had an individual in our after-school program who, while he did not utilize the terms transgender, he did identify as a boy, even though he was assigned female at birth. And this individual student was frequently put in detention, assigned in-school suspension, chastised for subordination by teachers and administrators. Mm. And all of the reasons that they were consistently marked as insubordinate was because they wanted to be called he and him. They wanted to use the boys' bathroom. And every time they tried, they were written up. And this student confided in me and many of their teachers and peers that when they turned 16, they were likely dropping out of school because school was not safe for them.
Mm. You bring up bathrooms. There are sports teams and other, physical issues that crop up in school, you know, uniforms and things like that. How should districts navigate all of the issues that are around gender identity?
I don't know that I am qualified to say how a district should handle all of the issues surrounding gender identity. I think about what the ADA did for disabilities, mm-hmm. Tragically not that long ago in the grand scheme of history, and how the ADA made school an accessible place for individuals with disabilities.
Mm-hmm.
My classrooms, you know, our buildings here on campus, we have elevators so students can reach a classroom. When an individual needs to use the bathroom, it feels like a very basic right. It seems like the responsibility of a public institution to provide a bathroom for that individual to use. And given that a toilet can be used by any gendered person, non-gender specific bathrooms seem like very easy solutions that would benefit anyone, not just transgender and non-binary individuals, just another bathroom for an individual to go to.
Let's pause right there with UW-Eau Claire English Education faculty Carly Grice with us. How teachers approach topics of sexual orientation and gender identity. We'll pick this up. News update is next here on the Ideas Network. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Here in Wisconsin and across the nation, we watch how courts will handle cases involving district student gender identity guidelines and what violates constitutional protections for parental rights and religious freedom. Join in on disclosing gender identity to parents and the way schools support trans kids. 800-642-1234. Carly Grice is here, an assistant professor of English education at UW-Eau Claire, specializing in high school English language arts teaching, and stays with us. Carly, when students confide in teachers, I'm wondering, are there reasons students confide in English teachers in particular?
I really love this question. Well, there are numerous reasons that I suspect, but one of the most frequently discussed in the English education community is really boils down to what we are tasked with doing. Within, you know, the sciences, oftentimes within mathematics or science, health, other things, there's this assumption and expectation of objectivity, of just the numbers, just the facts. And within the humanities, within social studies, within English, we are discussing humanity.
Mm.
We are also, as English teachers, tasked more so than many other fields. This is not saying that every field shouldn't be doing this work, just that the expectations often fall on English and social studies to ask our students to think critically about society, to not just take statements as given, but instead to ask questions, to interrogate, to think who is included, who is excluded. But even beyond that, I think it is ultimately that English, we teach stories, and stories are the places where individuals see themselves, speak their voices, can recognize experiences that they have had, and can see experiences that they've never had. So when in our English classes, we are asking what might seem like common core standards, explain the character development of Hamlet, or discuss the trajectory of this character from Toni Morrison's The Bluest Eye. Our students are looking into individual humans where they're thinking about emotions, they're thinking about events and experiences that have happened. And one of the best ways English teachers get our students to be engaged with these books is by asking them to connect themselves to the texts and the stories.
Mm-hmm.
Once you start to ask students about themselves, they will tell you. Young people will tell you more than you have asked, actually. But especially when they trust you, when they see that you authentically care what they have to say, they're like, all right, here's what I have to say.
Mm-hmm.
So English teachers will often get those stories of the kids' lives, whether in actual assignments where we often ask students to write about their lives, or just in between classes or coming up during a teacher's lunch period or planning period.
Right, think and reflect. Yes, I hear that. Let's take another call now. William is with us. William, hi. What's on your mind?
Hey, good morning. Yeah, I was just listening to the show, and I just wanted to agree with a lot of what I'm hearing from your experts there. I'm a parent of a trans child, and my child came out when she was a young adult. And it was incredibly difficult for me as a parent to get the gender right and name my child in her preferred pronoun. You know, after raising my child for 20 years and she came out as transgender, you know, I was just used to my kid being my kid. But, you know, it turns out that my kid was a different person than what I knew. And I accepted that and, of course, loved my child and cherished her. But, you know, like I heard some of the comments about naming the person by their preferred pronoun and how difficult it is for those people to experience being misgendered. And in defense of folks who aren't used to that, you know, for me, when I misgendered my kid, it wasn't intentional. It was just because it's hard to, you know, switch gears and mm-hmm. understand that this person has a new preferred pronoun. And so, you know, while it is difficult and dangerous for that, you know, person, like emotionally, on the other hand, it's also, you know, people, parents and other people are facing some challenges by getting the pronouns right. So there was that. But I can stop there. Or I also just wanted to say that I agree the school districts, you know, their main purpose is to teach our youth, and our youth are our treasure, you know, and we really do need to make sure we get it right. And I think what's going on in Eau Claire and around the country really needs to be understood. And people who are so reactionary against all of this really need to understand that, you know, the well-being of our young children is at stake here. And the school districts are not, you know, trying to corrupt our youth. It's just part of education and counseling and care for our youth to understand them and see them for who they are and who they want to be.
Well, William, I'm so appreciative that you could bring voice to this really complex topic, and especially of how you feel as it hits so close to home. Carly, what's coming up for you?
Thank you so much for sharing all of that, William. Something in particular that's coming up for me is that we are tasked in schools with, particularly every year, we are tasked with a harder and harder job. We ask teachers not just to teach content, we ask them to be on the front lines of a mental health crisis in our country that even, as I'd mentioned before, journalists and specialists are desperate for solutions. We ask them to be mandated reporters to keep an eye out on our young people on if they are showing signs and symptoms of being abused at home. We ask them to make sure that they're being critical, but not too critical. Make sure that they're supporting an ethical and moral citizenry in this country, and yet to not do anything that could upset anyone. And of course, we're now asking teachers also to defend against school shootings at a rapidly raising rate. There's only so much that teachers can do. And when I think about the acknowledgement of our young people and the role, particularly when I think of the main concern in Eau Claire and many of these districts of the supposed secrecy or privacy from the parents, no child is going to ask for their parents not to know about their gender if they feel safe telling their parents about their gender. More often than anything else, the parents are very well aware of their individual child and who they are, what they are like. Also, more often than not, the parents, as you heard from the earlier reporter, are involved in the development of a gender plan or the discussions with a teacher about how to support and advocate for their gender creative child. When the parents aren't involved, it is for that child's protection. Hmm. And the other thing that was coming up for me when William was talking, I have a wonderful book here because literature is, of course, one of my other specialties. And it's a nonfiction text written by Catherine Gonzalez and Karen Rain called Trans Plus, Love, Sex, Romance, and Being You. And it's really an incredible handbook for adolescents, for young people who have questions about trans identity, whether it is about their own or their friends, parents. I would encourage you, if you're like, I need to know more myself, this is a great book for you too. And one wonderful thing I heard Gonzalez, one of the co-authors, say at a English teacher conference is, since the internet was created, young people will find answers. They will find what they need regarding their bodies and regarding sex and regarding gender. And it's a lot better if that's coming from a school with trained and supportive adults who are looking out for their health than chat rooms and Reddit and blogs and places where they could get very unsafe and inaccurate information.
I'm going to just reintroduce you. UW Eau Claire English Education Professor Carly Grice is with us as we look at the intersection of parental rights and gender identity. You can join in 800-642-1234. Carly, I'm so glad you were going in the direction of resources, because KB from Sheboygan called, and KB works with LGBTQ plus youth and is worried about the mental health risks they face, the things that we've been talking about. And KB would like to know where they can find more information about gender supporting plans and how those plans can help support our youth.
Yeah, KB, thank you so much. I too am deeply worried about our young people, those of all genders and all backgrounds. One of the best places to find resources is GLSEN. That's G-L-S-E-N. It's a website that has a wealth of resources for parents, for teachers, for young people, and also the Trevor Project, T-R-E-V-O-R, which specializes in supporting and trying to keep safe and save our trans youth who are in more dire mental health crises. What I love about both of these websites, and something that speaks to the reason why why we need to be concerned about some parents or outing our children to some parents, both of these websites actually have this wonderful thing that is a rapid exit. So if you tap on the screen or on the computer, escape three times, it immediately closes, because some youth who are looking for answers might immediately get in trouble for researching help. And so I love GLSEN and the Trevor Project for that. Both of those will also provide not only the kind of qualitative data that books and stories will give, but quantitative data, such as that when transgender youth live in a community that is affirming or attend a school that is outwardly affirming of their identities, both of those prevent or lower the risk of suicide rates.
I was going to jump in and say, it just makes me think about how much your curriculum has to change. Even as you look at your own textbooks that your students are using for their classroom experience before they head out to be student teachers, I would imagine you really have to be adaptable in your curriculum to prepare them.
Yes. curriculum should have always been adaptable. And the best critical and student-centered teachers have always been adaptable and flexible, bringing in contemporary literature, bringing in young adult literature or children's literature to, books that were actually written for this audience that speak to their lived experiences. Quite another debate for another time and topic would be on kind of our traditional really exclusionary canon that is often taught in schools, especially high schools, and how few individuals, not just gender, but race, socioeconomic status, sexuality, ability, are included in our traditional texts, our traditionally used texts. So when I prepare my students, I try to prepare them for, you may walk into a school in a district that says, you are going to teach the Scarlet Letter. Lord knows I was. And how can I teach that canon and still remix or disrupt or include voices that aren't otherwise in that canon? And if you're a teacher, National Council for Teachers of English also has something called hashtag disrupt texts that provides resources for teaching adolescent and children's literature and mixing up those canonical texts so that you can be inclusive of more identities, including transgender, LGBTQIA, et cetera.
Carly Grice is on the UW-Eau Claire Education faculty teaching the next generation of high school English teachers. Join in on how schools approach lesson topics involving sexual orientation, involving gender identity. Who should know when a student is transitioning? What resources they are given access to? 800-642-1234. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The Human Rights Campaign has published a guide calling it a first-of-its-kind blueprint for supporting transgender students in K-12 schools. Still time to talk about chosen names, pronouns, confidentiality, restroom access, sports, harassment, bullying, all topics that this guide covers. 800-642-1234. Carly Grice is here, an assistant professor of English education at UW-Eau Claire, stays with us. Carly, you also study adolescent sex education and drug use education. Are young people receiving the information they need in those areas that could also, impact their questions around gender identity?
They are most certainly not, at least not through our public institutions. It is appalling to me, and honestly, easy Google searches for anyone. There are numerous websites and resources that gather what are the sex education guidelines across the country. And I know, I believe maybe a month or so ago, y'all actually had a wonderful piece done about sex education here in Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. But many states do not require factually accurate information about bodies and sex in their sex ed. So just doesn't even have to be actually based on any kind of science or proof. Many states have statements that teachers and people who work for schools to teach these sex ed are not even allowed to mention LGBTQIA identities in their classes. So of course that says nothing for, or that points out that any individual who does not have a heteronormative sexuality or does not have a gender binary choice or approach with their body, they're not getting any information at all. And the individuals who we are asking to live in a society with other humans empathetically aren't hearing accurate information either, which of course leaves our young people open for misinformation, disinformation, which is another major concern of ours right now.
Let's go to Linda in Eau Claire. Linda, what's on your mind?
I just want to draw attention to something. Recently, a friend shared some articles with me about transgender issues. I encourage people, there's more to this than meets the eye. It is not something that's all very easily understand. I encourage listeners to take a look at what happened in England with a Tavistock clinic that dealt with gender identity and children. There is a lot of damage that is being done at that clinic for routing people, children, into sexual identities that later on they regretted. There's an awful lot more. And I don't claim to know a lot about this. This information just came to me last week. But I hope that our school systems that are using curricula for sex education really understand in depth issues around transgender.
And Linda, thank you. I want Carly to give some insights here. Carly, what would you like to share?
So I never heard of this. So I would have to Google a bit more to understand what that is. Something that I teach my students is triangulating information. It's really important, as I mentioned just seconds ago, about misinformation and disinformation. I'm going to go to a slightly different topic, which is my specialty in drug education. I've tried to stay off Facebook because of the degree of misinformation that I see spread, particularly when I watch individuals and members that I know from South Carolina sharing information. Occasionally I'll hop on Facebook and see what's going on. And I saw just the other day a shared post by a family member, actually, about fentanyl, which we all know, hopefully at this point, is a highly dangerous drug that is causing a lot of overdoses. But it was incredibly factually inaccurate. It wasn't true at all. And it was something that within seconds, students in my classes could refute and say, this is not true. So while I do not know anything about this particular situation that the caller called in about, the importance of triangulating information is finding multiple sources, asking where the information is coming from, what stake they have in the message that they're putting out there, and following their data. So for me, I would want to know a lot more about what exactly are they doing. At the end of the day, the schools around here are not forcing anything on young people. In fact, we are just saying, do you already have a name that you want us to call you? Do you already have pronouns that you identify as? The sex education is an entirely different concept and much larger than the discussion happening in Eau Claire. Mm-hmm. In Eau Claire, we just want our young people to see, we see you.
Carly, thank you for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me.
Carly Grice is an assistant professor of English education at UW-Eau Claire, specializing in secondary English language arts teaching. And earlier, we talked with Eau Claire Leader Telegram journalist Madeline Furstenberg. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.